Eddie Moflaherty, and you're listening to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Thanks for joining me. Today's guest returns to discuss not one but two books for 2015. Dr. Don King is a respected authority on the poetry of C.S. Lewis and is also becoming a leading expert on the works of Joy David Mynn, Lewis's wife. The books I'm speaking with him today, in fact, both relate to her. One is a collection of her poems, and the other is an analysis of her writings in general. Welcome back to All About Jack, Don.
Thank you very much, William. Good to be here again.
As I mentioned, the current year is 2015, for those who may be listening to this years later. And this year is the 100th anniversary of Joy Davidman's birth. So let's start off with this. I want you to mention the names of the books, because I haven't done that. And then also is the fact that this anniversary was occurring. Was that a key motivation in releasing them now?
No. The fact that this turned out to be the year that these two books were published really didn't have anything to do with the anniversary of her birth, but serendipitously, it's sort of nice that it worked out that way. The two books are entitled A Naked Tree, Love Sonnets to C.S. Lewis and Other Poems. I actually started working on this book in 2011 when a good deal of new material that Joy had written was discovered. The second book, Yet One More Spring, A Critical Study of Joy Davidman, I actually started working on in 2006. And as I started working on that book, one of the things I did was collect letters. And I became so interested in the letters that I put aside writing Yet One More Spring and instead put together a book of Joy's letters entitled Out of My Bone. And that was published in 2009.
Let's go ahead and focus on the first book, the one about the poems. What is found in this volume that wasn't already released, even though other poems by Joy were or have been out of print?
Yeah, this is not exactly what you might call the collected poems of Joy Davidman, but it's close. And it contains not only her only published volume of poetry, Letters to a Comrade, which appeared in 1938, it also contains another, that book, by the way, has 45 poems in it. But we also included in A Naked Tree the other 30 poems or so that she published during her lifetime. And in addition, again, because of some new material that we have discovered recently, there's another 250 poems that we didn't even know existed that we have now included in A Naked Tree. Part of that grouping of 250 poems includes a 45 sonnet love sequence that Joy wrote to Lewis.
Well, now, we haven't gotten into Joy's background. This purpose is not a biography here, but some are aware that much of Joy's poetry was written before she was a Christian. So some may think, well, why bother with her poetry that was written before she was a Christian?
Well, Joy was a gifted poet both before and after her conversion. And we should read and study an author's poetry for its artistic merit, regardless of where the author was theologically, I suppose. And there are really three themes that stand out in Joy's poetry. Readers looking at A Naked Tree, I think, will see these themes very quickly. First of all, readers will notice that Joy writes a lot of poems about God and about death and about immortality, particularly before her conversion to Christianity. Ethnically, she was Jewish, but even in her early poetry, even when she was saying that she was an atheist, she was still exploring the idea of God and death and immortality. And a number of those early poems, I'm going to read one later on, entitled Again Rising. A number of those early poems show her interest in these issues of life and death and God. A second group of her poems we would probably call political poems, and these poems definitely show her rejection of capitalism as a young woman, her support of the Republicans in the Spanish Civil War of 1936 to 1939, her deep hatred of fascism, and her early and fervent support of communism. And so just looking at where Joy comes into play in terms of a writer during the 20th century, those political poems, I think, will be quite fascinating for a lot of readers to take a look at. And then the third group, thematically, of poems, and this is by far the largest group, are poems devoted to romantic love. Even as a very young woman, it comes clear that Joy was passionate. She made early romantic attachments. It's clear that she was sexually active early on in her life. And when she loved someone, she loved with a kind of fierceness that often led to a kind of, if not obsession, at least a desire to possess the beloved. So I think those three themes, if you will, of her poems will be quite interesting to readers. And I think all of these themes also suggest something to us about why, in the end, Lewis found her so fascinating.
Now, you made reference to sharing some of, or at least one of Joy's poems here. That's officially going to be a question here right now, and that is, well, it can be rather limiting, but could you share one or two poems by Joy that you especially enjoy or feel our listeners will?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. And let me say that the book, A Naked Tree, is arranged chronologically, so readers can see some of Joy's development as a poet as she writes. One of the first poems we published is from 1929, and then the last grouping of poems, 1954 or 1955. So readers who like to see how a writer developed can see that as they move through the book. The two poems I wanted to read, the first one I mentioned a moment ago, again, Rising, is a really fascinating poem, and it's given from the point of view of Jesus on the cross. The poem was written in July of 1938, well before Joy's conversion. So it shows us, as I was saying a moment ago, it shows us of her early interest in God and even more particularly in Jesus. So the point of view is from Jesus on the cross, and I'll just read the poem now. It's again entitled, Again Rising. The stroke of six my soul betrayed, as the clock ticks I am unmade. The clock struck nine, my life ran down on gears of time with a sickened sound. The noonday struck a note of pride, spread on the clock I was crucified. The clock struck one, whose spear, whose dart transfixed my bone and narrow heart. The sound of seven filled me with bells, I left great heaven for little hells. The midnight let my blood run out fierce and red from my opened mouth. Great chaos came to murder me when the clock named the hour of three. The dawn grew wide, the clock struck five, and all inside I was alive. So again, I think that's quite fascinating that Joy, as a non-believer, can write a poem from the perspective of Jesus, suggesting again that there was a resurrection. Very curious poem for her to write at that point in her life.
Yes, definitely.
So the second poem I want to read to you is from the sequence of 45 sonnets that Joy wrote to Lewis. We don't know if Lewis ever read these sonnets. I suspect that he did. This is sonnet 29, and listeners will notice the phrase, a naked tree. It shows up in the first line of this sonnet. And just briefly to explain, I think what Joy does here is create a metaphor in the poem. She is the naked tree. And the gardener, or if you will, or the man who finds the naked tree, brings the tree into his house, and the tree begins to bloom. And I think what she is suggesting is that in terms of her relationship with Lewis, he awakened in her a certain yearning and a certain desire. And I'll just leave it at that and let listeners hear the poem. There was a man who found a naked tree sleeping in winter woods and brought her home, and tended her a month in charity until she woke and filled his quiet room with petals like a storm of silver light, bursting, blazing, blended all of pearl and moonshine. He, in wonder and delight, patted her magic boughs and said, "Good girl." Thereafter, still obedient to the summer, the tree worked at her trade until, behold, a summer miracle of red and gold, apples of the Hesperides upon her, sweeter than Eden and its vanished bowers. He said, "No, no, I only wanted flowers. And so I think in this poem, what she's suggesting metaphorically is that Lewis awakened her desires, but then when he became aware of those desires, he didn't want the fruit, he only wanted the flowers. He didn't want to take that relationship any further, at least at this point in the sequence of sonnets. Joy only published 5 sonnets during her lifetime, but as her collected poems suggest, she wrote over 90. So I think the sonnet form for Joy, she's very good at the sonnet form, by the way, I think the sonnet form often served the place of a journal, because she's so open and so honest and so raw in these sonnets that she writes, not just to Lewis, by the way, that, again, the sonnets serve as something of a kind of a journal form for Joy, where she reveals some of her deepest desires and aspirations and frustrations and so on.
Now, let's go ahead and turn to your other book, which is, at the time of this recording and probably release here, it's not out yet. It's scheduled for mid-September of 2015. Again, it's entitled Yet One More Spring. Now, let me have you underscore, though, again, the difference between this book and the other one, even though both are about Joy Davidman.
Sure. A Naked Tree are poems that Joy wrote, so it's her work. I just served as editor in terms of putting the poems together. The second book, Yet One More Spring, is my critical reading of Joy's poetry and her fiction and her nonfiction.
So this book is not due out until September, but it can now be pre-ordered. Well, now, how is this book arranged, and what are some of the key themes that you present?
I did this study of Joy's writings chronologically. That is, I looked at her earlier writing and went through the last book that she published, as well as some of the poetry that we've discovered since her death. And I think there are 4 ways in which I hope readers will be influenced by reading my critical interpretation of Joy's work. First of all, I think that if we look at Joy's work chronologically, that at least some readers may decide that her place in the canon of 20th century American literature deserves a bit more attention than it has heretofore received, particularly because of her poetry. For instance, her poems, those I've already mentioned, give evidence of her efficacy as a poet. For instance, she uses irony effectively. Her imagery is evocative and striking, and her subject matter exposes her profound understanding of the human condition. And moreover, her work as a novelist and as a book and theater and movie reviewer is also noteworthy, and it illustrates much about her intellectual, aesthetic, and artistic development. Just to go back to her poetry for a moment, when I first presented Joy's love poems to an audience, this would have been, I think, in 2012, I actually presented information about these new poems, particularly the love sonnets to Lewis, at the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society. And afterwards, a member of the faculty there at one of the colleges came up to me and said, you know, when this poetry becomes public, it's certainly going to boost Joy's place as a 20th century American poet. So one of the things I hope this book does is, in fact, give support to that idea. That is, Joy ought to be looked at, Joy Davidman ought to be looked at a bit more seriously as a 20th century poet. Part of the reason I don't think that's happened is that so little of her poetry was available. As I said earlier in our discussion today, only about 75 poems appeared during her lifetime. That's not really enough of a mass of poems for someone to be considered, I think, a significant poet. But this new grouping of another 250 poems that we have, I think, bolsters the contention that Joy is a very important poet in the 20th century. Secondly, going through her work chronologically shows us something of her religious, her philosophical, and her intellectual journey from secular Judaism to atheism to communism and to Christianity. Her very personal engagement with these issues offers key insights into the historical milieu of America in the 1930s and 40s. And in spite of the fact that she later rejected many of the ideas espoused by communism, many readers will benefit from understanding her beliefs in the context of her published works. It's a well-documented fact that a number of active American communists during this period became disenchanted. And while there's some other studies documenting this more general disaffection, I think in my book I explore her rejection of communism, and it provides important insights into her intellectual honesty and personal integrity. Third, this chronological exploration of Joy Davidman's work shows how she matured as a writer. I explore her commitment to the craft of writing, especially her voice, her rhetoric, her style, and the literary influences informing her work. And I think that's a very important thing. She understood the intellectual energy it takes to become an effective writer of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction, and she never backed away from hard work. And then lastly, this chronological survey of her work shows her literary influence upon C.S. Lewis, something that has not been sufficiently noted until now. In addition to examining the 45 love sonnet sequence that I mentioned earlier, I argue that Lewis's autobiography, Surprised by Joy, was influenced by his reading of Joy's autobiographical essay entitled The Longest Way Round. And we know that Lewis read The Longest Way Round well before he wrote Surprised by Joy. So I make the case, by looking at both of these works, that it's likely that Joy influenced Lewis's Surprised by Joy through her autobiographical essay. So I think those are four things that readers could take out of Yet One More Spring in terms of helping them better appreciate Joy as a writer.
Now, earlier when we were talking about the poems, you essentially commented about some things related to the poetry that you told me before we were recording that is noted in this book, and you were just noting about the impact about her her own an essay, a much shorter thing than Lewis's book on his conversion. But what about the other material from Joy before she became a Christian? What are some of the key points that you make about that?
Well, I spent a good deal of time looking at Joy as a movie and book and theater reviewer for The New Masses, which was the semi-official magazine of the Communist Party of the United States of America. Joy had something of a poison pen when it came to being a reviewer. She could be quite brutal at times, but she was also quite perceptive. And she could see through Kant, she could see through Slush pretty quickly, and she could put her finger on where a movie in particular was ineffective. So that's one thing I spend a chapter or two on. I also spend chapters on Joy's novel, Anya, which was published in 1940, probably her most effective piece of fiction, and very much worth readers taking a look at. I also analyze her second novel, Weeping Bay, which was published in 1950. Weeping Bay was published after her conversion, and to some degree it reflects her conversion, but it also shows that she was still being driven in part by, if not communist principles, at least socialist principles, because the focus of that novel has to do with a Catholic priest who goes to a little town in Canada and tries to help to organize a union of workers who work in an iron factory. So those novels are both very interesting, and they show us much about Joy's efforts as a writer and her effectiveness as a writer of fiction.
Well, now, some may not be aware of the fact that Lewis wrote the foreword to Joy's book Smoke on the Mountain, which deals with the Ten Commandments. And I think until your book of letters came out, this was the only key material from her in print. Regardless of that, what can people learn from this work?
Yes, I think Smoke on the Mountain, as I understand it, it continues to be used by some groups who are doing a study of the Ten Commandments. Lewis praised the book on several levels. He thought it was quite interesting that Joy, being ethnically Jewish, could bring insights into the Ten Commandments that perhaps those coming only from a Protestant perspective might miss out on. So that's one reason he found the book so compelling. In the book itself, Joy takes each one of the Ten Commandments and she spends a chapter on that commandment. She usually begins with an anecdote or a story of some kind that's going to relate to the particular commandment that she's going to deal with. And then she makes a number of, I think, interesting insights. Some of them are a little bit dated about the commandment in terms of the late 1940s and the late 1950s, early 1950s, in terms of American society. How is this particular commandment being observed, or in most cases not being observed? I wouldn't say that she's pedantic in the book, but she does let us know what she thinks about how American society of that time was not measuring up to the call of the particular commandment.
Well, shifting away from the current books we're discussing, we alluded to your earlier work, and that is Out of My Bone is a collection of her letters. Not long ago, I re-released our chat about that book. While there's a link in the show notes for people to listen to that, could you maybe summarize what people can find in this material?
Out of My Bone is a collection of Joy's letters. And these were the letters that we knew existed up until about 2008. It's heavily influenced by the letters that Joy ended up writing to Bill Gresham, her first husband. But it also contains letters that she wrote to other people, many of them having to do with her time as a communist, her early enthusiasm for communism, and so forth. Since that book came out, there have been quite a few other letters that have been uncovered. And so I think probably maybe in another 5 years or so, we'll revisit the possibility of doing a second edition of Out of My Bone. And I think one of the things, one group of letters that we'll be able to include that weren't available when we first published Out of My Bone are the letters that Joy wrote during her first visit to Oxford when she first met Lewis. These would be letters that covered August 1952 to December 1952. And, of course, a lot of readers will be interested in what was Joy's take on her visit to England. What was her take on meeting Lewis for the first time? What was her take on living for a while in Oxford and so forth? So, again, probably another 5 years or so. We'll see.
Well, to give people wanting more to go back and listen to that interview as well as get that book Out of My Bone, what were some of the, any one or two finds or things that you learned more about Joy as a result of putting that book together?
I think what I'll emphasize here is what a careful and thoughtful critic Joy was when other people wrote to her about their poetry in particular. Because Joy served for a time as the poetry editor of the New Masses, she often would receive poems from budding authors, and she would write long, single-spaced letters back offering criticisms of the poetry. Sometimes she was quite brutally honest, but she also was very perceptive. And I think if you read the letters of the poets that she had written to, if you read their thoughts later on, in most cases, they saw that the criticisms that she was making of their poetry were quite valid. So those letters suggest something to us of Joy's understanding, her knowledge, and her ability to critique other poets, usually with sometimes brutally, but usually with some very helpful ideas as well.
Returning to wrap up here to the two releases for 2015, let me have you, besides mentioning the names again, just briefly recap why you think people should consider getting them.
The first book that we talked about today, A Naked Tree, these are the poems of Joy Davidman. Again, over 300 poems in total in that book. And I think Joy's greatest gift as a writer was poetry. Her fiction is good, her nonfiction is good, but I think it's her legacy is going to be her poetry. And even though poetry isn't everyone's favorite thing to read, If you want to know more about this woman, and if you want to know about how she won Lewis, I think you have to look pretty carefully at her poetry. We know that Lewis wanted to be a great poet. We know that he read a lot of poetry and continued writing poetry throughout his life. So one point of connection between Lewis and Joy was their love of poetry. And then the other book we talked about, Yet One More Spring, this is a critical study that I've done of Joy's writing, not only her poetry, but her fiction and her nonfiction. And by the way, I don't think I've mentioned this before, I also explore some of her unpublished work, including a novella that she wrote. So I'm trying to offer a comprehensive view of Joy as a writer, and as far as I'm aware, this is the first time anyone's written a comprehensive critical analysis of Joy as a writer.
Well, we definitely encourage people to consider both of the books that you've just been talking about. Again, A Naked Tree is already out when this is being released, but Yet One More Spring, although it's available for pre-order, that official release date is not until September 15th of 2015. Well, Don, thanks again for being my guest.
Thank you very much, William. I appreciate being on your show, and I appreciate all you do to continue to promote Lewis and the writers that influenced him and that he influenced.
Thanks also goes to you, the listener, for overhearing our conversation. I'm William O'Flaherty, and this is All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Don't forget to follow the show notes for links to get either or both of the books by Dr. Don King, as well as being able to hear the previous interview with him about the Letters of Joy David Mann. I also have had him on the show several other times, and there will be a special link to enable you to find those programs. You can find the show notes by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The latter is where I have the audio files hosted, and it might be easier to browse past shows there. Podbean is spelled PODBEAN. At Essential C.S. Lewis, you can also find other material related to Lewis. This includes a variety of articles, as well as a daily fact quote and quiz. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with others. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online at EssentialCSLewis.com or at AllAboutJack.podbean.com. As noted, either place is where you can find the other programs. Recent shows include a special two-part essay chat with Andrew Lazo on Lewis's shorter work entitled On Stories. And a few months ago, I had Colin Duryea on to share about the Oxford Inklings, a new title for 2015. And another new show was a short talk I gave entitled Not Quite Lewis, Questionable Lewisian Quotations. Again, you can hear these and others by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, that's info@EssentialCSLewis.com.